I think a brand is always built first internally.
Yeah.
It's what your people say about you, feel about you, that actually translates the brand. And then you take it external because then you're living that brand inside out.
Yeah.
But to really build enduring credibility, it comes down to reducing that gap between what you're saying and how the company and the brand is actually behaving.
Right.
And that, I think, is crucial. And that's where reputation lives and that's where credibility lives. If the product consistency falls off, people will start talking about it.
There's no right or wrong in brand building. It's subjective, it's philosophical. Yeah. So it's whether the faith in the path that you've taken is transferred to the people who are coming in. Are they believers or not? Honestly, brand building is so much about belief and faith.
As a company, we have been building nations. We've been empowering communities. And steel is what builds a country. And literally, our steel has been shaping and building the India of our dreams, right? And therefore, to take that position of saying we are the steel of India because we are building India every day. You don't see it, but all, you know, every iconic marquee installations, buildings, the bridges in India today have been built with Jindal Steel in it.
Brands tell stories, but not all stories are remembered. And it's not really for the want of visibility, right? Because we are living in an age when you see a profusion of platforms and access to those platforms is an even, you know, crazier thing. But there is something else that really matters, and that is endurance. And as we've all seen and heard, endurance is really not about how well a narrative is built or crafted. It's really about how well it is lived and done so consistently. Welcome to the season finale of the Steel of India podcast. I'm Sheetal. And over the last six episodes, we brought you several different stories pertaining to steel. In fact, it's fitting that we started with the heart of the Steel of India story. If you recall, episode one was called Caring Beyond Bounds. And it's fitting because we're ending at the soul. We're talking about narratives that endure. But if you're thinking that this is going to be a masterclass in, you're getting out your yoga mats and your gym mats to build some endurance muscle, that's not what it's going to be. It's not a class in storytelling. It's really about storytelling as a test of leadership, of conviction, of purpose, and certainly of discipline. Now, I'm going to come to our favorite part on the series, which is the introduction. And you may think, oh, these intros are very long. But you know what? When you're talking about narratives, brand, storytelling, and you have the kind of people who are brands in their own right, well, then the introduction is really part of the story. So let's start with Arpana Kumar Ahuja. She is EVP and Head of Corporate Brand and Communications at Jindal Steel. And her own personal brand is quite a mosaic of experiences, you know, from a Fortune 500 company in her past, which is Shell, to a global PR and communications organization like Weber Shandwick, to a host of other, agencies. And I have to say, even if it was a small little old stint, with that name or brand that is synonymous with go-to, we use this word, right? Go-to this and go-to that. Britannica. How many people have Britannica encyclopedias stacked on their shelves? I do. So I'm quite certain that all of this has added to the person that she is today. And she's also been on both sides of the story, right? She's helped craft narratives, and she's also owned brands that have required these narratives. So her voice is going to be, I think, critical to the story. We also have Abhijit Awasthi. Now, shall I take about a 10-minute sort of break to collect my thoughts over here? Because he's part of Sideways Consulting. He's a founder of that organization. And they are a creative collective and they span multiple disciplines. And if you really want a sense of creativity and understand what that word really means, you should check out their logo. I was in a dizzy when I saw it on the website. Something else altogether. Master forgerers won't be able to copy that one. I can assure you of that. But before Sideways, Abhijit has been part of ONM India as its national creative director. And he's worked on campaigns that have become sort of, integral to our brand imagination today. And what do I really mean by that? Think Cadbury, think Fevicol, think Asian Paints, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. But what I'm particularly happy about is the fact that the past has finally caught up with Abhijit today on this very show. And that is because he has a BTech in metallurgical engineering from BHU. So I should say you can't, run. You can hide for a bit, but here you are. I should say alloy to you instead of hello. So thank you for joining
thank
us.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And we also have with us Arun Sudhaman. And Arun himself has done many things in his life. We were just talking offline about how disruptive some of the decisions some of us make are, really. But how, in the end, all's well that ends well, right? So Arun is a global media entrepreneur. He's been a journalist. He's an industry analyst. And he's also the CEO of Promise Foundation. And he's also the founding editor of Earned First Media. And that's the kind of expertise he brings to the table. In fact, we're going to look to him for some contemporary sounding insights because the world moves today on data and insights, as it rightly should. And that is what I think Arun will help bring to this conversation. So thank you to all of you once again for joining us on this last episode of Season 2 of Seal of India. And the other thing that we're about to do on this episode, the ultimate episode of Season 2, is to actually get up close and personal with a few words that all of us have encountered at some point in our lives, but not really, wrapped our complete heads around. These are common enough words in the corporate context. You've heard them: storytelling, narrative, brand, and most certainly, this one's difficult, purpose. And yes, you know what the first question is. It's got to do about with purpose and brands. But before that, I've got to ask our speakers, is there a word that you would like to absolutely retire from the vocabulary of the world of branding? Arun, we'll start with you first.
There are many, but I would go with purpose, actually.
All right.
I think it's a word that has been stripped of all meaning. Mm. It has become quite empty, and it's used as an excuse, I think, for brands to make all kinds of grandiose promises, and it becomes more performative than realistic.
Well, I think you've given me room to head into my next question, but I do need responses from Arpana as well and Abhijit. So what's yours?
For me, it would be disruptive, because again, that's chasing visibility for the sake of visibility very often, and then boils down and settles down to the sameness of everything else.
Yes.
I don't like the word trending, because to me, it's the absolute antipodal of what branding is about, which is long-term. So if you want to build a serious brand, stay away from trends.
All right. Then let me start with you, right? Purpose, as Arun said, it's a word that is now misused or overused in many ways, and probably right. And it's also interchanged very often with things like mission, values, statement, and all kinds of things. Purpose is one of those words. But there is performative purpose and there is real purpose. How does one tell the two apart?
I feel intuitively you can get a sense of whether it feels authentic or not. I feel your firm or your company can have a purpose, but to try and attach your brand to a purpose, I feel many a times it's products or agencies and marketers, they feel that what they're doing is a little too shallow, needs to have a deeper purpose. So let's cling to it. Whereas I don't think you should look at it like that, Some products and services lend themselves to genuinely making a difference in people's life out there in the classical purpose way, in a philosophical way.
Right.
But many others, if you're selling a candy and you're making a kid happy, that's perfectly fine. You make someone happy, that's purposeful.
Right.
So I think you just have to be authentic to what you're doing. And people are smart. They smell it out.
Right. So Abhijit, I mean, that was useful. You're saying that one shouldn't overthink something called purpose, and one tends to get anchored in words more than the sentiment, which just needs to be an honest take on it. Could be as simple as make someone happy. Great. But even so, for the purpose of that PowerPoint presentation, I'm going to come back to you, Arun, because we do need to sometimes frame or rather supply a context to why we are doing something, right? Mm. And he's given us a good place to start. That said, what happens, let's just say, when you conflate the two, when you define purpose-led branding and you conflate that with risk-managed, positioning. I'm sure a lot of that happens when you're worried about something not landing in quite the right place.
Mm. I think we already have mission, vision, values to help organize a company, its objectives, its commitments. Purpose seems like something that has been brought into this equation to try and add an additional layer of meaning to what brands do. And it has become kind of a bandwagon almost to help companies, compete in this arena of virtue. And you end up signaling virtue rather than actually performance. Mm. And I think that is actually a bigger risk, in my opinion, than using purpose as a way to mitigate reputation risk.
Right. Superb. And Arpana, I must come to you, right? When you define this construct on which a brand narrative must be created, this foundation, I'm sure it's something, it could be a sentiment, let's just say, that you want to propagate. How does one build in resilience into that choice such that it does not change with a new leader joining at the helm or perhaps a market cycle?
It's back to the basics, right? What guides you? What are the principles that you build your foundation on for a company like Jindal Steel? For us, it's our vision statement. Building nations, empowering communities. Now you take it down through the value chain, whatever decision points, whether it's investor-led, it's, at the plant, some big investments, people, communities, our brand narrative, everything is helmed by that. So it's a discipline. And then it's agnostic of who's at the chair, right? Because that's your blueprint. You follow that. You stay true to it. And it's not something that's trending. It's not something that's in the season for now. It's timeless because that's what you are building year after year, action after action.
I want to ask you another question. I'm sure there are brands or brand narratives that somehow have stood the test of time. They may have not had useful words like purpose, etc., to help them along the way, and yet they did their job perfectly well. What is one of those narratives that, according to you, has stood the test of time?
Okay, at a very philosophical level at top, I'd say religion, Hinduism. Yeah. And if I was to pick something a little bit more tangible, say Swiss watches, that's a thing.
Right.
Yeah. And I think they've been around for centuries, even if you forget the Hinduism part, but say Swiss watches, they've been around for at least 250, 300 years, generation after generation. But if you look at the core of how they've built this whole concept and this narrative, 3-4 very basic principles, what they really deliver, precision, with craft, authenticity. They don't chase, this generation likes this, so let me change my design for them. Let's do this, let's do that. And most importantly, they've attached meaning to what they do.
Right.
What that watch stands for. And it could be any of these, whether you take those really old Vacheron or Constantin kind of watches or a Breguet or any of these. But there's something timeless about them.
Yeah.
So I'm not even picking a specific brand. I'm just saying just the concept of a Swiss watch.
Yeah.
So to me, that's a great example.
Amazing, because you mentioned Swiss watches and there are these adjacencies, content that's being created, endless hours people are watching and how these things are repaired, right? Yeah. The intricacies of it. And there are people who are constantly watching videos like this. But Arpana, what about you?
I think for me, the first brand that, and I know Abhijit is going to probably smile, and it's not because you're sitting on this chair, but for me, I think Fevicol. I think that's a brand that has year after year after year retained its, the authenticity, the core, no matter whatever new campaign they come up with, the product value is what is retained all throughout.
Absolutely.
I'll choose one that I think is fairly well known in brand circles in these conversations, and it's Patagonia, the US clothing brand. It's difficult to think of a brand that I think has built such a trusted relationship in a relatively short space of time. And I think everything it does is built around a core idea of leaving the world in a better place.
Right.
Which is not something you always associate with consumer goods, but they behave according to that principle. And it's about much more than just marketing.
Right, absolutely. I wish they were a tad sight cheaper, though, at least for our pockets here in India.
Saving the planet is not cheap.
Tell me then, Abhijeet, what then makes a narrative endure? Why do some stories have these wings and fly across time, across regions and so on?
I think one is they don't keep changing the core very often. So yes, the embellishments can change. The way and manner in which they put out there, that can change. But the core is same. The tone and tenor is same. I think consistency is really important. Many times, marketers and agencies, you know, they get tired of their own storytelling much sooner than the man on the street does. Mm-hmm. And that very often, this thing that, oh, I'll do something very different. No, you don't have to do something different all the time. It's perfectly fine. Do the same thing, just do it slightly better. You know, stick close to what your core value is. So I think consistency, not getting tired of what you're saying, and enjoying. Basically, just the brand needs to enjoy the way it comes across to people.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think discipline, right? It all is a discipline of what you are intending to achieve in the long run. And as you rightly said, it's a long-term story. Brands don't get built in a jiffy. They don't get built over trends. It takes many years of consistent hard work to tell your story and for it to actually, so it's me telling a story versus the actual test is how is it received with the audience that you're taking it to, right? How are they building the story in their mind? And that takes time. It takes consistency. And especially in today's world, there's so much that you're consuming. So if you keep changing, you're losing that stickiness in the mind of your stakeholder,
right?
Consumer.
And, you know, since we're talking about tracts of time over here, they both mentioned how it endures. Endures, the word itself means there's a tract of time. There's another aspect to it, credibility, right? So how do narratives build credibility for a brand over a large tract of time? How does that actually play out?
So I think there's two issues, actually. The first is, and I often wonder why brands switch so often. And Abhijeet mentioned there's sometimes this desire to jump onto every passing trend. There's a lot of bandwagons.
Yeah.
And I think it's just because this kind of short-termism is rampant. And people are often judged on quarterly results or monthly results. And so there's this kind of irrepressible desire to chase the shiny new thing. But to really build enduring credibility, it comes down to reducing that gap between what you're saying and how the company and the brand is actually behaving.
Right.
And that, I think, is crucial. And that's where reputation lives and that's where credibility lives. If the product consistency falls off, people will start talking about it. You can go onto Reddit and you'll read about brands that were once good 10 or 20 years ago and the product consistency has dropped, but the marketing is still wonderful and is telling a great story. So if that gap becomes too wide, that's where credibility comes under threat. So it really comes down to behavior, I think, and ensuring whatever story you're telling, the rhetoric matches the reality.
Right.
I call that the PBC, performance, behavior, and then communication. Because what happens is where a lot of times brands tend to get it wrong is they tend to communicate much before there's performance or there's actual lived behavior for your consumers to see that. So I always feel there has to be performance, behavior, and then communication.
And yet, You have, I'm sure, enough and more examples. I'm sure, Abhijit, you're quite familiar, and both of you as well, of brands who've checked all the boxes on the paper that you possibly can think of and yet do not earn the trust. Why does this happen? What have they got wrong or what haven't they checked, which is not in your checkbox list?
One, there is a high likelihood that they are not checking all the boxes.
Hmm.
Yeah. Secondly, maybe they are checking the boxes, but each time with a different kind of a tick mark.
Hmm.
But on a more tactical side, on a practical side, if I was to say, this does happen a lot when the frequent changes on the company side as well as on the agency side.
Right.
Since I mentioned, consistency is so key to building a brand. Yeah. What happens is, and one of the reasons, and I'm just sort of picking up from what I've been hearing, so many people lament that, oh, there used to be those wonderful brands, but what's happening now? Mm. You know, the businesses are being built, but where's the brand? One of the reasons is that earlier, if you see people on the company side, the marketeers, as well as people on the agency side, they were there for years. Yeah.
Mm.
So you, and brand building takes time. You make mistakes and you learn, by the way, each passing time.
Mm.
But if every 2 years people are changing on either side, all the learnings are lost.
Hmm.
And then therefore, somebody comes in and makes new mistakes.
Correct.
And that's one of the reasons that many companies aren't able to build a really sustainable brand over there. The other thing is, maybe the foundation with which they were building on, that wasn't solid enough. Maybe it wasn't insightful enough. So maybe that itself was weak.
Weak.
So no matter how much you put props in and around it, if the base is not really solid, it'll never stand the test of time.
Hmm. This controlling the narrative, right? I'm going to ask both of you. Is it like Don Quixote charging at the windmills? Can you really ever control a narrative? Or is it just a pipe dream that one must chase?
So when you need to over-explain, right? Over-communicate. Hmm. That's when you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So, and to your point, like hold the narrative, it boils down to, you need to know who you're communicating with. If you know who you're communicating with, well, invest time in knowing that.
Hmm.
But at the same time, as a brand, I cannot cater to every size, right? One size does not fit all.
Mm-hmm.
So I, therefore, making those choices, and again, back to his point, making those choices and being authentic to who you are. So I can't control how it will be taken, but I can be pretty close to how I would like it to be taken if I know my audience well.
Right.
And again, to add to what you just mentioned, I think one of the dangers, while of course it's a great thing that in today's day and age, there are various ways to tell a brand's narrative, you know, just not the television and radio and print, you've got digital, you've got retail spaces and a million other ways of doing it. So while the plethora of touch points is amazing canvas, but you don't have to participate in every conversation. I think that's so important these days. So many times I've heard this from clients and some of the other people. Oh, this is what happened. What should we say?
Mm.
You don't have to say something all the time. It's okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That ties back to what you said.
It's quite often about not like making the choice of, you know, what not to do.
Yeah.
I think those are more important than making choices of what to do.
Yeah.
You learn more, I think, as a brand from listening rather than talking.
Than talking. Yeah. That applies to, I think, life.
Basic tenet of communication, right?
Yeah. We should all observe a minute of silence right now on this podcast towards that end and listen to the silence. But nevertheless, to wrap up this conversation, the first and foremost, or the biggest trust breaker, Arun, in brand narratives.
Honestly, I think this might sound a bit left field, but I think increasingly taxation is becoming a real problem for companies.
Yeah.
I think people are now looking at how much tax companies pay in different jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. And it's all very well and good to say that you're supporting communities here and you're spending this much money on ESG and you're doing all this stuff in terms of CSR and you're a company that believes in the welfare of minorities and you're empowering women. But if you're not paying your fair share of tax, I think fundamentally that breaks trust at a very basic level.
Okay. Interesting.
Overpromising.
Okay.
I feel, again, back to if you can't show it, don't say it.
Okay.
So performance, behavior, and then communication.
Yes.
Pretty much the same thing. I'd say insincerity. Yeah. If you're insincere, in whichever ways, whether it's the way you look at your financials or whether you behave the way, you know, which is not true to what your brand is, how you try to come across differently to the world and how you treat your, say, employees differently.
Yeah.
Any place that insincerity shows, I think there's a breakdown of trust. And so many of the e-com guys, for example, and quick-com guys, they run into trouble because of the news, that of the way how they're treating the people who are the delivery boys, etc. So I think, and in today's day and age where, you know, cameras and mics and platforms are available to all, insincerity can get caught out so easily.
Right. In fact, a very interesting point, and I really very passionately believe in that, is that brands, you know, we very often concentrate so much on the external world. I think a brand is always built first internally. It's what your people say about you, feel about you, that actually translates the brand. And then you take it external because then you're living that brand inside out.
Yeah. And that brings me to the context of Jindal Steel, right? Now, steel is not, I don't see it as a category that immediately evokes an emotional connect. Of course, that's the kind of steel that we are talking about here and now, because there is another kind of steel that my mom uses. If she lends a steel bartan to somebody, 20 years later, she'll go back and she'll say, see my initials, my wedding, whatever, Trousseau collection. So that's how emotional steel can actually get. And yet, it's not something, the kind of steel we are talking about on this is not what you see. And yet it is integral to every bit of infrastructure that holds us up as a nation today. Why is, and I'm going to start with you, Abhijit, why should someone care, therefore, about a narrative like Steel of India?
I'll say it from both sides, which is from the point of view of the company as well as people out there. I think people do realize that how much steel is important to their lives. Every now and then, it's nice to remind them in a nice, endearing way. Get them to care a little bit more. And surely, at least this is my point of view, I'd rather the man on the street cares about steel than reels, for certain, because that's eventually, that's where life is. So definitely. And from the company side, they're doing something amazing, which is contributing and to people's personal lives as well as nation building. So yes, I think it's only fair that people get to know the contribution.
Right.
I guess for us, it's like I was telling you, right? It's back to the basics of, as a company, we have been building nations. We've been empowering communities. And steel is what builds a country. And literally, our steel has been shaping and building the India of our dreams, right? And therefore, to take that position of saying we are the steel of India because we are building India every day. You don't see it, but all, you know, every iconic marquee installations, buildings, the bridges in India today have been built with Jindal Steel in it. So therefore, take that claim. But that's a more functional thing.
Right.
What does it mean to the people at large?
Right.
It's the ubiquitousness of steel in everyday life and how Indians are shaped with it. I think that's what we want to do.
Yeah,
showcase.
Absolutely. Yeah.
For everybody who's seen the Steel of India campaign film, the way steel is shown in the, you know, the lady in the, you know, cutting her, the cultivation to that sickle, to the, you know, the metallic, the steel hook for a fisherman, to the railway track. So it's just how it is so much a part of our everyday lives and has shaped us as we've grown.
Absolutely.
Yes, yeah, interesting. I used to live in this city in England called Sheffield, which is the steel city in England. And it's actually one of my favorite places in the world. And I always thought there's something quite noble about steel. And increasingly nowadays, we're all online. We're in this digital environment. We don't know what's real and what isn't. We deal with avatars, we deal with, you know, bots, trolls. And I think there's something that is still noble about, you know, so, you know, a physical product like steel. It, of course, it has that classic secondary brand issue where, you know, it's inside everything. It's fundamental to so many things. But I think there's real value in demonstrating the contribution that something like steel makes, not just to nation building, but to people's hopes, their dreams, their aspirations. And just in terms of Steel of India, I had been talking about this earlier. I love the grit that it reflects. You know, there's a level of honesty and candor that comes through the use of music and soundscapes. I think that's increasingly crucial to how this country sees itself.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he's pretty much given us a set of words with which to explain the Steel of India campaign. But, you know, come back to brand narratives at India, stories, etc. It's one thing to, you know, write a great story or tell a great story, but a whole other thing to hold on to. And I don't mean hold on to for the sake of the narrative, but hold on to a narrative across a certain time, to be faithful to it. Maybe that's a better way to put it. Faithful to the right thing. So, Arpan, I'm going to ask you, what does it really take to hold a narrative line for the right reasons across a period of time?
Discipline. It is the discipline and the belief in what you're building, doing it consistently, as we said earlier, not chasing the trends. And like the brand narrative is not just at the brand level, right? What makes a brand? Brand is made at various touch points. So how is a company showing up with investors? How is a company showing up with the employees? How are we therefore truly being the Steel of India? How are we with our communities? How are we with our business partners? So that's where the narrative, and just a film doesn't cut it, right? So it's shaping that every day, making the choices, the difficult choices. When Steel of India got launched 2 years ago, and you know, everybody, of course, it was so widely celebrated, but a conversation at the shop floor with, you know, one of our employees, and I generally wanted to ask him, because there were hoardings in the plant. And so what is it? He said, his thing was, yeah, it's like, it looks very nice. But so I said, so what does Steel of India mean to you? And his thing, in literally in Hindi, ki bhai jo hum yahan kaam karte hain, wo desh ko banata hai. To mujhe wo malum hai, mere liye, main jo kaam karta hun, wo desh ke liye karta hun. And I think in its truest sense, that is the Steel of India.
Yeah. Absolutely. Have you seen brands veer off their core often, Abhijit? I'm so sure you've had to sort of reel them back in. And what are those scenarios?
It happens all the time. And I think at least on a practical note, where I've seen this happen most is when there's a change in the management. Because there's no right or wrong in brand building. It's subjective. It's philosophical. So it's whether the faith in the path that you've taken is transferred to the people who are coming in. Are they believers or not? Honestly, brand building is so much about belief and faith. If you're not a believer in brand building, there is no way it's going to happen, because it's a long journey. You will make mistakes on it. If you're not a believer, you'll say, you know what, let's just change my path and let's go somewhere else. And that's where consistency and all those bits start toppling. So from where I've seen, whenever there is change, that's where the chances of brands going awry are the highest.
And is there a time when a brand is better served by silence? I mean, I've seen these, I've always wondered, right, on television, I'd see these, especially these IT product, I mean, hardware kind of companies, like random ads would appear, you know, exactly the ones I'm talking about. They were back there in the mid-90s to early 2000s. And then you'd, okay, and then suddenly that logo comes and that's what, you know, it's this particular hardware. So they are notorious for not bothering, or even if they do something about with respect to their product, it's very perfunctory. And I'm sure a lot of brands believe that I don't need to say anything. I'm required in every household, so boss, that's what it is. But there is also the other side, when you're better off being silent, don't say anything. What are those scenarios? I'll start with you, Arun.
It's a very interesting question, because if you compare where we are today with 5 years ago, brands are saying a lot less. There's a lot less rhetoric about purpose, about social impact. We're in an environment now where there's more backlash against those kinds of statements. And this phrase has emerged, came from a Reputation Council study last year called strategic silence, which is when brands choose to use silence as a kind of strategic lever compared to saying something. I don't know what's that strategic about it. Honestly, it's just silence. Silence itself can be construed as a statement. If you don't say something in which you do have a stake and in which your employees are expecting you to take some kind of a stance, that can be just as damaging as saying something in which you have no business making a statement. So it's quite a difficult equation, I think, for companies these days, because I think the tendency now is to say less. But that can be as damaging as saying too much.
Yeah. Do you agree we're saying less? Somehow I would think there's a profusion of voices out there.
Without doubt. Like I said, you don't have to participate in every conversation. And it's like, you know, a brand is what? Actually, a brand is a product, a person, an idea, a service, which is seeking to build an emotional connection with you. Actually, that's all that it is. Yeah. So just the way we behave in our lives, you know, you won't interrupt someone if, you know, two people are having a conversation, you don't know enough about it. You don't just go and butt in because you'll feel, you know, you'll seem like a fool. Yeah. Or if you're saying something with the confidence, but you're just saying something absolutely crap, of course you will be caught out. So actually the same principles of life apply over here. It's relationship building. Brand building is relationship building. So just be cognizant of that and be...
Stay silent.
Yeah, I mean, like just... Be normal. Don't think too much about it.
Somehow getting the feeling that we're thinking too much about a lot of things on this podcast, but it helps. It helps a lot of people. Arpana, what about you?
So I think, yes, the word that Arun used, strategic silence, but I also feel like what he said, that nowadays he sees as a trend for people to be silent. I think a lot of it is also stemming from a low appetite for risk, right? Because people are so worried about, you know, getting the backlashes, etc. But I think that is not a strategic choice. I think that then shows that you are weak in your core. If the strategic choice is actually knowing who you are, and as he said, deciding when is the right time to speak, and otherwise it's fine. You don't always have to jump into every conversation. And, you know, when there are these trends, everybody like those, you know, in this world of social media with those stickers and hashtags. No, it's fine. It's okay to be who you are. And I think that's also somewhere a reflection of the maturity of a brand, right? As I can say from where I am in my life stage, I think that maturity also comes with a certain experience over the years. So mature brands tend to hold their line much better than some of the younger ones who are out there trying to, you know, make an impression real quick.
Yeah.
Maybe less concern about consequences as well. Arpana mentioned discipline, but I think courage is just as important to have that ability to say no, maybe when you're facing a lot of pressure. There's so much pressure now to jump on every trend. You may have a CEO or a CMO or whoever asking, why aren't we getting on this? And it does require, I think, a level of courage to either speak up or to stay silent when the occasion demands it.
So narratives don't break in campaigns, they break in decisions.
Another milestone that is upon us, which is we're soon going to be a 100-year-old nation. India at 100 is that very powerful idea that everybody is talking about these days. From a brand perspective, what are people going to stop believing about brands in 2047? We'll start with you, Arun.
I think we are seeing that notion. If it was ever successful, it's certainly less and less fit for purpose. We're moving, I think, away from this more globalized world into a more insular environment where I think it's more about local markets, local communities, subcultures and tribes. And so this idea that just because a company or a brand is present in lots of different countries and, you know, has the same promise and messaging and logo and all of that is exactly the same everywhere around the world.
One thing that we will not believe about brands.
I think the more we change, the more we stay the same. So for me, I think whether it's now or it was in the past, from the time when I started my career, I still feel even at 2047, sincerity, the consistency, clarity, backed by relevant performance to back, is still going to be valid even in 2047.
Pretty much the same. I don't think people's relationship with brands will change. The same thing, which is there'll be brands they like and they vibe with, and there'll be brands that they just don't enjoy. And somewhere it's the same core of authenticity. If it feels authentic, if it feels that, yeah, they're talking to me and I like the way they address me and looks like I can have a relationship with them, I think that will stay. So I don't think those bits will change at all.
Hopefully in 2047, we're still going to use sofas no matter what AI is around, eat food and go to holidays and things like that. So those products, services, ideas that, you know, you want people to adopt at scale will still remain in our lives. But what is the scenario where things are rapidly going to change? Do you think that is a scenario when the entire lexicon, we just spoke about one word that you wanted to oust from the lexicon right in the beginning, entire lexicon is going to have 50% replaced with a whole other vocabulary. Is that ever going to happen on account of the rapid change with respect to AI?
Maybe different slang. Certainly if I go according to, you know, Gen Z slang these days, it is a different lexicon in many ways.
It's very difficult to predict. I'll tell you why. Because two bits are happening at the same time. One is, in India at least, I would say even globally, people are getting more insular. And I would say even in a positive way, which is pride in your region, your culture, your language, etc., etc. So those brands that ride on those, there is a chance, especially for those brands which work on relatability and not aspiration, the chances are definitely they'll do well. But the other day I was reading an article in one of the newspapers and it said one thing which is bothering many of the philosophers and linguists is that AI is picking up a certain language and the way that language is spoken is also being sort of, it's like dialects are going out. Everyone's using the same phrases, the same structures. So there is almost like a base level way of talking and communicating which is happening. But by the way, right now it's primarily in English. But as more and more other languages also participate in this whole LLM thingy and the way it pans out, it's just very difficult to predict whether there'll be a, since you use the word lexicon, whether there would be one lexicon which will fit everything or whether there'll be a million gazillion ones. It's very difficult to say. But yeah, the fundamentals, the basics, those aren't going anywhere. So it's best not to get distracted with the vocabulary and just stick to the
emotion. The sentiment.
That's it.
That's a huge opportunity for brands as well, right? If you can be the brand that sounds human in a sea of jargon, I mean, it's...
Absolutely. There you go. Being human, I'm appropriating someone else's brand for the purpose of this podcast, but I will be forgiven, I'm sure, for doing that. But it's that time where we have three or four more questions. They're rapid. I'll start with you. You've already answered this, but I've got to ask again. Instinct or data? You said instinct, but think again.
My instinct is still to say instinct. We have plenty of data, we have plenty of tools, and we have lots of technologies to help us understand data, but instinct is irreplaceable.
All right. Okay. And a mistake that everybody makes when it comes to storytelling?
Being inauthentic.
Okay. You said that too. One truth about brands.
About brands.
Very vague question.
Very vague question. Yeah, I mean, like, we can have many podcasts just to discuss this.
Yes, absolutely. Can't make it easy for you, right?
Yeah.
You can shoot from any angle.
So I will shoot from others, but I'll also participate in some of those questions. Those are very interesting questions.
Okay, data or instinct or data?
No, instinct any day. I'm like, I'm a creative guy. There's zero doubt in my mind.
No, but your firm does like multidisciplinary or technology.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. There's this British philosopher I really like.
This is how rapid fires get hijacked, but I love it.
Trust a creative guy to hijack any agenda.
rapid fire round, talking about philosophy.
So there's a British philosopher, I like him a lot, Alain de Botton. And he's got a lovely definition for intuition, which is, it is a lifetime of experiences informing judgment in real time. So that's data. Yeah, it's not just something that I've just said.
Yeah.
So I think people forget that when someone says, it's my instinct, it's my intuition. No, it's not at the moment.
Yeah.
It's last decades of stuff.
Tough.
Which has been processed like this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you.
It just sounds so like it.
Data informs, yeah. Instinct decides.
So, so definitely that. I think people need to know, first of all, it's an endurance sport. Mm. You know, you'd use that word endurance in the beginning. It is truly that. Mm. It takes stamina. It takes time. It takes resilience. It takes courage. And only and only if you and takes faith and belief. If you don't have these, you might as well not embark on it.
Yeah.
Because this is the truth. It will not change. It will take time. And it's not everyone's cup of tea. That's also a fact.
Mm. Absolutely. Wonderful. And I think on that note, we started with endurance, as you rightly said, and I did tell you, bring out your gym and yoga mats. Time to do the Shavasana pose, because it truly is a wrap to season 2 of the Steel of India podcast. And on this episode, I'm sure one takeaway is the most important one, which is to stay authentic, stay true to the goal that you're trying to serve to your audience. I think define that and you should be all right, mota mota, I think, right? And I think if that is not happening to you, these are the three people to get in touch with. Email IDs will be published at the end of this podcast. No, I'm kidding. None of that is going to happen. But it's brilliant for you to have stayed with us across 6 episodes of season 2, and we'll be back soon. Thank you for watching. Take care.